Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
Good Monday morning, everybody. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. Hope your week is getting off to a great start. And guys, it was interesting to hear George Carl right there talk about the incident in the restaurant. It was a big part of The Last Dance where Michael was offended that George Carl kind of went by him, didn't acknowledge him, didn't stop and say hello. But George was telling us that he had, was it Brendan Malone, was an assistant coach on his staff, that he knew that Michael was going to find motivation in anything that was said, so they decided to stay away from him. Fact of the matter is, Michael's going to find motivation whether you stop, whether you don't stop. Whatever you do, he's finding a reason to cut your throat afterwards.
No, and all great players, it's crazy. Michael Jordan is known for these sort of things, but I would say all great athletes and players find some underlying thing to go at somebody with, whether it's the reporter in that town talking crazy and not the team, whether it's somebody on the team that was saying something to him crazy in college, but he finally got a chance to see him in the pros. It's all, you always, Michael Jordan's not unique to this, okay? Whether it was Kobe Bryant or everybody, whether it's Shaq going up against Dwight Howard, whatever it is, you remember what somebody says and you remember how somebody treats you, you know, because you always, even though you always hear that athletes don't read the newspapers and pay attention, you've heard that many times, I'm sure.
Of course.
And they all read the newspaper and they all pay attention. They ain't not one dude.
But of course.
And you saw Michael Jordan in the documentary. He's sitting there reading the newspapers. He picking up the sports section, reading it. Because the information is valuable. That information is valuable to know. Oh, okay, he said that. All right. Mm-hmm. You do understand what I'm going to do to y'all. That resonates. And so when you see George Carl, who walks past you as a coach, He takes on a different mentality. Now, I understand what George said, that Michael should have approached him. Well, you, George Carl, man, you ain't Michael Jordan. I understand y'all went to North Carolina, but you are George Carl, you're not Michael Jordan. And as a coach and an elder statement, because you pushed up more because you're a coach and not a player, so you're held to a higher standard, you're supposed to, as a coach, you're supposed to approach the player at Michael Jordan's status because he's bigger than you. Woo-hoo! And embrace him. Now, the fact that you didn't do it and you was trying to avoid some sort of confrontation so that Jordan get at you, you added fuel by not going to him.
There's no win right there. You know that music. You know what that means. Michael Thompson is in the house. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
A little sad. I feel like the Sopranos or Curb Your Enthusiasm just ended, you know, last episode, and I feel like there's a void in my life.
Well, you can always run it back.
No, you know, you can't see it again. Once you see it once, Keyshawn, you're not going to watch it again, are you?
You know what you can see?
Would not.
You can see Game 6. That is coming up on ESPN on Wednesday. It's the full game telecast. It's in high def, which is incredibly important. Never before seen footage with the cameras that were captured by The Last Dance. That is coming up Wednesday at 6 o'clock on ESPN. So we do get to relive it one more time.
Yeah, but only game sixes I want to see repeated on my Laker game sixes. I don't care about these other ones.
So when you looked at last night, Michael, last night, there's two episodes. Last night, both episodes, and you saw the way that things were broken up in terms of, you know, Jerry Krause and how it ended, and they came at the end. They tried to come back and make it right. Reinsdorf did, but it didn't go that way. Could you ever envision Dr. Buss in the Lakers when y'all had y'all run saying, well, no matter what you do, Pat Riley, you're out and we're not going to try to run it back?
No, that's crazy. When they were still winning championships, Riley left, but by that time we had lost to the Pistons, so our run was over. But yeah, when you're on top like that, Keyshawn, you being a Super Bowl champion, you know this firsthand too, and you too, LZ, being the playground legend that you are. When you're on top, you keep playing until somebody bumps you off, and then you say, okay, we're getting older, we just lost again, chasing our seventh ring. Now we can accept it if we break up. But when you're just coming off of a championship and you believe you can win one more, man, you try to run it back as much as you can. But would they have had to pay Scottie? Was he coming back on that same contract, or was he a free agent?
I do believe he was a free agent because they did a sign and trade with Houston.
Yeah, that's right. So Scottie probably would have wanted that 5-year, 60-something million dollar deal. That was huge money back then. So I don't know if the Bulls would have given him a 5-year deal. They might have said, come back on a 1-year deal for like 10 or 15 million. I don't know if Scottie would have done that. He probably would have wanted a 5-year deal to get that financial security.
But even if you're Scottie, I mean, even if you are the Bulls at that point, and Scottie elects to leave, you have the bulk of your team still intact with Jordan, with Kerr, Dennis Rodman, Phil Jackson. You know, you have those people still in play. You could maybe go out and grab.
Ron Harper's still there, too.
Harp's still there. So you could maybe go out and grab somebody that's not Pippen, but somebody who can still give you some stuff and make a run at it.
No, Keith, Jordan wasn't going to win without Pippen. Pippen was, you know, too good, too valuable to him. Did too many
but we don't know until you try.
Scottie Pippen out there.
You don't know until you try. We've never seen Jordan. We've never seen Michael Jordan in his championship days without Pippen. We've only seen him in his early days without Pippen, not in his championship days.
Nah, they wouldn't have won without Pip, LZ. Jordan was slowing down, and Pippen, you know, took a lot. He was younger, took a lot of the heavy load off of him sometimes. So they would have contended. Don't get me wrong. Them and Indiana would have been right there, and the Knicks, too. But I don't think they would have come out of the East without Pippen.
But wouldn't you rather contend to throw in the towel?
Oh, yeah. No question about it. I agree with you, Key, and LZ, and Travis. They should have given it one more year, even without Pippen. I don't think they would have won without Pippen, but at least
Michael, let's say Pippen stays. Let's say they convince Scottie Pippen to do, you know, maybe they give him a big bump in pay and he comes back for one more year. Maybe let's assume for a second that they figure it out and they roll it again. You said they wouldn't win without Pippen. Do they win again with him the next year? Because like we've seen with the Warriors dynasty, like we've seen with LeBron and his run, sometimes just the world conspires to keep you from it. Or as long as MJ and Pippen were together, Phil Jackson, they're going to keep winning.
Yeah, you know, they could have done it, I think. I think it would have been much harder for them to come out of the East because Indiana was getting better. They just barely missed out there in Game 7. So Indiana would have been a tough obstacle. And maybe, you know, instead of Jordan playing in 80 games or 78 games, maybe they would have started the load management back then to try to conserve him for the playoffs. So maybe it would have started way back then where Jordan would take less minutes and play less games to keep him fresh for the playoffs.
You know what? What's really interesting, too, is that you guys remember that 99-2000 free agency class was really loaded. And that's the class, I think, that Tracy McGrady left Toronto and went to Orlando. If Michael Jordan is still in Chicago, even if you had run it back and say you had lost with Pippen, you let Pippen go, you actually bring in Tracy McGrady, you right back in that thing with MJ and Tracy McGrady.
No, LZ, they didn't have this cap room because everybody would have wanted a pay raise. Steve Kerr, Ron Harper, so they wouldn't have enough money to sign Tracy McGrady. Because remember, McGrady came in on a max deal back then, and they would have to pay Jordan another $35 million by himself. So they wouldn't have the room to sign a Tracy McGrady.
Man, ain't nowhere in the world I'm letting Steve Kerr money stop me from trying to get Tracy McGrady. That's just me, though.
Well, that's true. You could have just said bye to those guys and bring up McGrady. You'd be able to do that.
Well, when you look at it, though, I think, you know, they made a mistake. They somewhat, to a degree, probably admits it now. Also, when you look at Michael Jordan's performance in Game 6 of pushing off B. Russell, is that game alone, knowing the stakes, knowing everything that's at stake, where you're at, all of those sort of things, is that one of the best games that he's ever played?
Oh, no question about it, man. At his age, he was like 34, I think, at that time. And what was at stake, knowing this was the last run for these guys and all the pressure on the road like that? Man, Michael Jordan just took his legacy, his legendary status to another level in that game. And then finishing with that classic pose and the game-winning shot, I mean, you can't ask for a better exit than that, Keyshawn Johnson. It's like you catching a touchdown pass in the Super Bowl with no time on the clock.
Michael Thompson joining us here on the morning show. Michael, was there a guy that was a contemporary of yours that was like Michael in the sense that you just stayed away from, you didn't say anything? Because we heard last night Brian Russell had said something. We saw B.J. Armstrong say something. We saw all these different guys that kind of yanked on Superman's cape. Who was that guy for you?
Oh, there was a whole bunch of guys like that in the league, man. People act like Michael Jordan's the only guy who could destroy you or torture you on the court. You didn't want to do nothing to rile up Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You just left him alone. Or Dr. J. Legendary players like that. Or Larry Bird. Legendary players like that, man. You just left them alone. Don't wake them up. Yeah, you can have confidence in yourself. But if you're a cornerback and you're facing up against Keyshawn Johnson, don't talk trash to him, because then you know you're in trouble when you're playing against a stud like that. So you just knew who to keep your mouth shut against. So it wasn't just Jordan, fellas. This has been that way throughout the time. You think anybody talked trash to Will Chamberlain? Come on.
Well, that's what I was telling you, Travis and LZ, is Jordan, we glorify it with Jordan, but Kobe, Shaq, and I said it a minute ago before you came on, no matter, all good players, great players, players that stand for something within their leagues, at some point, they're going to bite you. It may not be the first half. I remember my own, for my own sake, guys, you know, I might have a slow first half or may not be doing something. And I, you know, had guys talk to me. I told them, you do understand there's 15 minutes left in the damn game. I'm going to eventually get you, and you're going to cost your team. And would have those conversations with them. And the next thing you know, they become the front page of the New York Post.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right, LZ and Travis. There's some guys you can talk trash at because you know that they're not better than you. They're not going to raise their game up and hurt you. But some guys, just leave them alone. If they're having an off game or just an ordinary game, don't say nothing to rile them up, because they're just too good and they know they can torch you at any moment. So you got to learn to have that kind of respect. It's good to have confidence in yourself, but you got to know who to talk trash to and not to.
Michael, we saw two great no calls last night as well. The Reggie Miller push off of Jordan before he hit that clutching three-pointer. And then, of course, Michael Jordan moving Brian Russell along for that last shot. Which of the no calls was most egregious?
The Reggie Miller one. You know, that would have been a foul in the first quarter. Stu Lance always says that if it's a foul in the first quarter, it's a foul in the fourth quarter. I remember that play live. I'm sure you guys saw it live, too. And you can see how an obvious push off it is. Just like if you see a receiver, as Keyshawn used to push off on those poor little defensive backs to get to
that
ball.
No, I didn't.
It's the same thing. It's pass interference, right? Offensive pass interference or offensive foul. Same thing, right, Key?
Yeah, if you get caught. If you don't get caught, they don't call it. What's
that? It's only a foul if they call it.
Only a foul if they call it.
If we could see it on TV, the referees had to see it on the court.
Well, in the B. Russell situation, I argue along with MJ and Bob Costas, his momentum certainly is shifting toward that way. And if you hit him in the hip in the right spot, you're going to get him to move on and stumbling. There's no question about it. Much like you just said, in football, I've run routes where a guy is with me, but he's going the opposite way. And as I get ready to break down and drop my hips and come out of my break, I can extend just enough and keep him tight to me on that hip with a little bit of a push. He's going to go flying, and I'm going to be wide open, but they never saw me extend.
Yeah, LZ, we got to give. See, LZ, Michael Jordan, you're the type of player like a Michael Jordan. You're a perimeter player. You handle the ball. So you got to admire Jordan's dexterity and abilities and athleticism on that play. Here he is going right full speed and under control. He somehow pushes Brian Russell away and be able to maintain his balance and composure and still regain his balance and knock that shot down fundamentally. That takes incredible skill to do both all those things at once.
Michael,
it's a great play, but we all know what it was.
Man, a little shoves. I mean, come on.
we all know what it was. It's a great play.
When LeBron goes to the back, he puts that shoulder on you. He's moving you out of the way, so that's part of the game.
And you cannot make that call in that situation, Travis, of a game. You cannot.
No, you're going to swallow the whistle. I mean, Reggie Miller said as much. He goes, I knew that I was going to make them make the decision, and he practically shoved Michael Jordan on the ground. Very quickly, Michael, about 30 seconds or so, I asked George Karl this. I'm curious your thoughts. How would you have, you know, in retrospect, knowing what we know about Michael now and having the opportunity to think about it for the last 20-plus years, how would you construct a team or a game plan to beat Michael Jordan in the finals?
You got to try and take him out of the game as much as possible, even though he operated on the perimeter. But a lot of times his game was in the mid-post, too. So I would say, listen, if Scottie Pippen or Horace Grant or Steve Kerr or John Paxson's going to beat us, we got to live with that. We're going to try to take Michael out as much as possible. He was a great passer out of the double teams, but I'm double teaming him as much as possible because make those other guys have to live up to do it over a 7-game series. Every now and then they're going to step up and hit big time shot, but can they do it over a 7-game series? We're not going to let Michael Jordan beat us.
Michael Thompson on the Sprint People's Hotline. Thanks, Michael. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, boys.
All right. So number 7, we never got a chance to look at it. Would it have happened? That's next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. All right, so Last Dance ends last night with the Bulls winning their 6th title, their 2nd three-peat. They beat the Jazz, the shot over Brian Russell, number 6. Number 7 we'll never, ever know because they decided to break it apart. Michael retired again before ultimately coming back. Scottie went to a different team. Phil Jackson retired briefly before ultimately coming to the Lakers. But let me put it to you this way. LeBron James, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Shaq, Kobe, Julius Erving, all of these guys, legends of the game, lost in the finals, if not once, multiple times. Would the Michael Jordan's, luck is the wrong word, but would his luck have finally run out? Would the world, the basketball world, just have conspired against him to have him finally lose one of the things had we gone into 7?
Well, maybe they don't get to 7. Maybe they get clipped by somebody, the Pacers or somebody. I don't know. But you certainly want to give it a shot. And his legacy doesn't get tarnished because he lost a game. It's cute.
Of course not.
Look, this conversation about 6-0 really started with Kobe Bryant and carried on to LeBron James. The argument of he went 6-0, you've yet to win. Because remember, it was always Jordan has 6. What do you have, Kobe? Oh, I only got 3. I only got 4. I got 5. I'm trying to make a run to get 6 to catch Jordan. That was the conversation. The conversation wasn't he's 6-0. You are 4-0.
No.
You need to get to 6 because Kobe had already lost in the championship.
But Keith, the argument is for not exclusively, but the O is almost as important because Kareem's got 6.
My question is, my statement is that conversation started to come up because of the comparisons. You started hearing more 6-0 talk because of the comparisons. Then you go into LeBron. The comparisons is LeBron's been the X amount. Oh, but Jordan 6-0 in his. And that's why people all like LZ always says, which he's right, is they don't count the ones that never got to. Because they don't want to count those. They only want to count the 6-0s because they have to have something to trump LeBron. So whether he was 6-0 or 6-1, it doesn't change who Michael Jordan is and has become to us.
All of the other great players lost in the finals at some point or another.
Were compared to Michael, though. That's the difference. The Kobe's and the LeBron's were compared to Michael. The Cap was never compared to Michael. Michael Jordan was, Magic Johnson was never compared to Michael.
You know, it's funny we go straight to the 7 and the O part at the tail end, a baseball break. And during that baseball break, the Houston Rockets won back-to-back championships. And people like to say they won back-to-back championships because they didn't have to face the Bulls. But when you go back and you look at that first three-peat, when the Bulls finally broke through and they won 3 in a row before the baseball break, Houston was comfortably beating those Bulls teams. They went 5-1 over 3 seasons before they went on to win back-to-back championships. So I'm not sure yet if the O part would have been intact before the second three-peat even begun. Because that Houston Rocket team, again, because their weakness was the middle, and Olajuwon was by far and away the most skilled big man in the game, was just killing them.
So I'm not trying to put words in your mouth here, LZ, but if I'm understanding this right, the O is as much about really good timing as anything else. That the baseball break coinciding with the second three-peat where Jerry Krause decided to put an end to it, where Jerry Reinsdorf allowed it to happen, that the O maybe happens if he doesn't go play baseball, and then the O maybe doesn't happen if he decides to come back and try to get a 7th?
Exactly. You know, and this isn't, and trust me, this is not MJ hate at all. But to sit here and to say a team that was beating
when you were rolling,
and then you go play baseball and they finally get to the finals and win championships, you got to think that was a formidable opponent. Let me ask you this question, sir.
Are you saying that Michael Jordan dodged the Houston Rockets for 2 years on purpose?
I'm not sure which show you're listening to, but that's not certainly what I said.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify. I just wanted to clarify. That's all, because it sounded like to me you were heading in that direction.
Your comrades must be broken. It's not from a lack of cords.
He was talking to the cable guy installing the cords.
I guess that's what happened. All I'm saying is that MJ went 10-12 against the Rockets in 13 seasons with the Bulls, and Elijah Wan was there for all of that. So this was one team that had to figure out how to get through the West in order to get to the finals. And when they did, they won the thing twice.
But I'm struggling to what happened to the Rockets after. Like when Michael came back to the NBA for the second three-peat, the Rockets did not appear in any of those finals on the back end of that. And I'm struggling to, in my recollection, why not? Did something happen? Were there extenuating circumstances?
There were a couple of things at play. One, for the second of the repeat, they brought in Clyde Drexler, who was pretty much on his last leg. Then they bring in Charles Barkley, who was on the decline as well, and they try to do that whole three thing. And then they brought in Scottie Pippen, another aging star. So essentially, they were trying to keep the thing going with aging players as opposed to, you know, bringing in youth to keep the thing going. Which, by the way, the youth was the reason why they got there. Sam Cassell, Robert Horry, they were kids that they surrounded Elijah Wan with. But then they tried to supplement it with, you know, aging superstars, and they were just too old. It was like when the Lakers brought in, like, GP and Karl Malone. But they brought
We got there, though. Karl Malone got hurt.
Well, and Shaq and Kobe were at the end of the rope.
We got there, though.
No, the Karl Malone and GP we got were not the Karl Malone and GP that.
Oh
we're
no,
used
GP
to seeing,
had a hole in his. GP had a hole in his glove, no question about it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But the Rockets
try to keep it going, but they try to keep it going with a broke down Pippen and then a broke down Drexler and then a broke down Barkley.
The idea of it makes sense, but the timing of it. I mean, to be that fortunate to be that, okay, this team is on the rise and I just happens to coincide with me going to play baseball. And then right when I come back is when things start to come apart for them. And then right before I decide, or I should say right after we do number six, then the organization decides that this is all over. I don't know about that. I really don't know that if he doesn't play those two seasons where he was a baseball player, if he doesn't stack a couple of months there or a couple of championships there, I don't know if they don't run it back for a seventh time after that last Jazz championship if they don't win it again. Because in the finals, Michael Jordan seemed to be able to go to another level. I mean, this is a guy that's averaging 35, 36 points a game in the finals. He would continue to elevate his game. And I don't know if just because it's the zero that's so extraordinary to me, does he beat the Rockets? We'll never know. Does he get number seven? We'll never know. But I'm not betting against that guy. This is why it's so disappointing that they killed it after six, because I never saw someone get him in the finals. That's why I keep asking Michael and George Karl this question. How do you beat that guy? And I still haven't heard a good answer.
It's one of those situations. The only way you was going to beat him was for him not to be there. That's simple. Simple.
It's not that simple.
Because when he was there, he won.
When he was there, he won. When he was there, he finally won. There's no doubt about it. But I'm not going to ignore what they were doing in Houston because they didn't get a chance to play it out. There's enough evidence there.
But Houston didn't keep it going, though. Jordan kept it going.
Here's the thing, though, Key. What the Chicago Bulls did is not the norm. What Magic Johnson did was not the norm. If you were able to get to the finals in back-to-back years, you were incredible. You were an incredible franchise. And I remember and talking to
no, and I think no, and I'm not taking anything away from Houston.
I was talking to Michael Cooper, and Michael Cooper reminded me that when the Lakers finally repeated, it was the first time a team had repeated in like 30, 40 some years.
Yeah, like, but nobody's taking that away from – no one's taking anything away from Houston. The point I'm trying to make is when Michael Jordan was there, he won. For whatever reason, when he left the game to go play baseball, Houston got out the West and ran into an easier opponent in the East and took care of business. If Houston runs into them in those 2 years after – those 2 years that Michael was retired, who knows what would have happened. You can't. We can't just say that Houston was going to beat them because of what they did to him in a regular season.
Well, listen. All I know is that.
I mean, I know you want Jordan. I know you want Jordan to lose.
All I know
damn.
Is the team. All I know is the team that beat Michael yep. Jordan in the playoffs got swept by the Houston Rockets.
All right. Aaron Rodgers has a backup, and he doesn't sound all that thrilled about it. We'll get into that one next on the morning show on 710 ESPN.
GEICO has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Aaron Rodgers is finally on the record about the pick that they made in the first round, moved up in the first round to do it, in fact, to get Jordan Love out of Utah State to be his backup quarterback. He says that now Aaron Rodgers is saying that retiring as a Packer may not be a reality, that he was not, quote, thrilled by the pick necessarily, but then added that I understand. That sounds like perhaps the most Aaron Rodgers statement ever, just kind of measured and qualified, but all sorts of latent hostility in that sentence.
Well, at least now we get clarification that he's not very happy. It's coming from him. It's not coming from a third party. We don't have to guess. This is what it is, and Aaron Rodgers basically has said such, that he wasn't happy, he gets it, he understands it, and he's going to move on. He may not retire a Packer. And I never thought that he would retire a Packer. I mean, guys like Eli Manning, that's Eli Manning's personality. He'd sit there and try and retire just as a Giant. That's just who he is, where certain guys want to continue to play beyond their years, and Aaron Rodgers is the type of guy that will continue to play beyond his years with the Packers and go on for a couple years with another franchise and take his greatness there and try to get something out of it.
I get all of that. What I don't get is why you would accelerate the process to make him unhappy. That's the part I don't get.
Well, I don't necessarily know if you accelerating it because you say he ain't going nowhere no time soon, though. This is not a 3-year, 2-year type situation. You know, because of the money, they're going to be stuck with him for at least 3 more seasons before.
No, I understand he's not going to be down the road. I understand they're not going to trade him or they're not going to cut him. I understand that. But if he's my guy, to your point, for the next, say, 2, 3, 4 seasons, and I'm paying him all this money, he's still playing at a huge level, playing this one of the best quarterbacks in the league still, why am I going out of my way to alienate him right now?
To get fired, basically, because what could potentially come out of this at the end of the day is that – this year you didn't select something that would have helped him. And let's say Aaron Rodgers goes on to have a monster year. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't have the weapons to get him over the hump. It's going to point back to the head coach and the general manager. So they set themselves up to be scrutinized and fired. Because, you know, at some point, whoever's running the Green Bay Packers or whatever, whoever makes those decisions, it's a weird deal because it's owned by the state or owned by a bunch of shareholders and all this sort of stuff. So you don't know who's doing the hiring and the firing. But clearly, if Aaron Rodgers has an amazing season individually and the team falters because they didn't have the weapons around him to get it done, you would think that the heat will now really be on the general manager and the head coach.
I'm just going to assume that the Green Bay Packers front office were watching, you know, parts of The Last Dance and thought they'd do the Jerry Krause thing and just say, let's start moving ahead of schedule. Because if Aaron Rodgers leads you to a 13-3 record and an NFC championship game, and, you know, they get beat by, you know, one of the best defenses of the last 5 seasons, I don't really think my next move is to think about his replacement. But that's just me. Like, that's just me. I understand why the Kansas City Chiefs did what they did, because they could clearly see that they had reached a, they had reached like a ceiling.
Yes,
and it's Alex Smith. It's not Aaron Rodgers.
And it's Alex Smith, exactly. But you just went 13-3. You're in the NFC Championship game. That's the Final Four.
Yeah, you went 13-3 and ran up against a team with a dominant defense.
Yeah, and your first move is to think about who's our next quarterback going to be in a few seasons. That, to me, was the confusing part.
The statement itself, too. I'm not thrilled by the pick necessarily, but added, I understand. Is that not the most Aaron Rodgers thing ever, where he's saying everything without actually coming out and dropping a bomb? But and we know how Aaron Rodgers operates. We talked about it at the beginning of last season when they got off to that good start, and he kept saying, "We finally got a defense. We finally got a defense. We finally got a defense."
You've got
bad stuff in the air in Green Bay before anything's even happened.
Well, by him saying that he's not happy with the pick, he addressed it. That's addressing to me. He doesn't need to say anything else other than I'm not happy with the pick. And I get it now. I got it. You're not happy with the pick. I got it.
Does it not create a difficult environment inside the building though?
Well, they calculated that. One thing I can assure you is guys in these positions have already calculated the risk. They've already figured out before they even did it what could happen. You know what I'm saying? It's like, if I do this, he's going to do that. If I do that, he's going to say that. If we did this, he's going to do that. He's going to be mad about this if we do that. What's going to happen? Well, he says, well, they've already calculated all that. They already knew if we do anything other than what people are expecting us to do, we're going to get pushback from him. They already know.
And you know what? I guess they've just decided that no matter what the pushback is going to be, he ultimately is going to be a professional, because how the team performs is a reflection directly on his own legacy as a player. And so even though he may not be happy, and he may say some little slick remarks, as Keys like to say, about management and coaching and stuff, at the end of the day, he's going to perform at his best when he's out there in the field. And they know he will. He's not going to flake on him in that way.
Did you guys see the what they have up on ESPN right now, the comparison between – not a comparison. They did a poll between Jordan and LeBron, and they broke it down in what looks like about 8 or 10 different categories, and Jordan swept them all. Am I to believe that there's not one thing that LeBron James is better at than Michael Jordan when it comes to playing basketball?
I looked at that garbage poll.
It's all subjective, man. You can pull, put stuff out. Field goal percentage, okay.
That's just a straight thing. But here are the categories, Keith. Better offensive player, Michael 65, LeBron 35. Better defensive player, Michael 60, LeBron 40. Better passer, 60-40. Preferred teammate, 65-35. Better clutch, 75-25. Choice to take the last shot, 75-25. More amazing, 75-25. And then more likely to win one-on-one, it's about 67-33. So
you're about 12 hours from watching Jordan.
That's why I just roll my eyes. It's such a garbage thing. I'm like,
You just saw Jordan hit the last shot, man. Come on.
LeBron James is in the top 10 in assists. Like, if there's any category where it at least should have been 50-50, it should have been passing. And the fact that they didn't even do that, I was like, this is just garbage. I don't care. Whatever.
But they can't. It's just off the heels of the doc, though. So.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
But what's 25 years from right now? So we're in the year 2045, and the LeBron James 10-part docuseries drops, and we do this again. Is it flipped because we just watched LeBron?
Yeah, it's flipped. Even if you don't even have to do 10 years, we could do it next year, and we can put his whole doc together.
Oh, I don't know
his
about
highlights.
That.
I bet you, if we put it together, and we put it together, and we go get Damon Jones, and we get. Richard Jefferson, and then we go get Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh and Pat Riley and all them, and then we actually show LeBron dunking on somebody and LeBron hitting a 50-footer from half court and LeBron taking his show to Miami and back to Cleveland, and we put it together and him building a school, and we put it together, I'm gonna be sitting on the couch saying, man, he was way better than Jordan.
the one that jumps out too. Look at the wins, 1, 2, 3, 4, the fourth one down, preferred teammate. I mean, LeBron has never been anything other than a great teammate. And at least if I missed it, he never punched any teammates in the face.
Because they would be dead. He's the son of Karl Malone. I mean, and that's the thing that cracks me up. Like, I watched it last night, and I'm in my head, like, going, damn, Karl Malone is on the blocks waiting for someone to feed him the rock. LeBron James is the size of Karl Malone. With the rock, with the handles.
Man, like, it works that way. Let me tell you, though, in all honesty, though, it works that way with a lot of athletes, though, in general, though. When you put it together, the documentaries and the highlights and all of this and of that, you forget how good somebody was. That's why it's hard to always say who's one, who's two, who's three. If I put something together on the cap and show all the cap's history and all, you'd be sitting there going, man, he was shooting skyhooks from the three-point line. Like you, am I right though? And then you would sit there. You would sit there with the picture of him and Ali and
Jim Brown
and everything. You put all that together and you talk about what he meant to the game of basketball. And you got the old timers and the young dudes and people will be walking away and saying, "Man, damn, yo, Shaq." Yo,
but peep this though, because I actually thought I had misremembered. Because they were showing so many shots of Jordan knocking down threes. I was like, damn, I thought Jordan wasn't that great of a three-point shooter. So I had to look it up because I thought I had misremembered. The man averaged averaged 0.5 three-point field goals made a game in his career. But the way they added it up the dock, Reggie Miller.
That's just like I was arguing with y'all. I was arguing with y'all the other day about if Reggie Miller or Steph Curry. Steph Curry is living with us right now. But when you saw him come off that screen and push off Jordan and knock that thing down with the bottom of the net, you can't hit here. It didn't touch the rim. You can't sit here and go, damn. I forgot.
No,
Reggie Miller was shooter.
That conversation is a real conversation.
No, but I'm just saying, you're living in the moment of Steph Curry right now.
No, the difference is, though, and the reason why I give it to Steph Curry is because Steph Curry's shooting changed the league.
I understand that. You're living in that moment, though.
No.
You're living in that moment.
Reggie Miller's three-point shooting did not change the league.
Because Magic Johnson changed the league as far as big point. Magic Johnson changed the league as far as big point guards go. Right? But.
No, Steph is a benchmark. Steph, the league is different before and after Steph Curry.
Yeah, but the conversation was pure shooter. The conversation was never about changing the league. It was pure shooter.
Well, he changed the league because of his shooting.
But Travis, was the conversation not about pure shooting?
Yes.
And so when you look at that screen, him coming off and fighting through Jordan and knocking it down all in transition, one motion, everything.
Didn't even look at the
off
basket.
Off the wrist. Didn't look, you look at that and you go, damn.
Steph Curry is simmering before
never
the ball
mind,
goes
man.
Through
never,
the
never
rim.
Mind. Never mind. You want to win the argument. Break time. Move along, Travis. Let's get George Sedano.
Cross talk with George Sedano coming up next. All right, time for a little cross talk with George Sedano. George, my friend, how was the weekend? Oh, George isn't there, so I guess he's still partying. Well. He's still got another, what would that be, 10 or, 10 or 12 minutes
well,
of his
you
weekend.
Know, I hung out in the, with my kids, and I,
Key, we're going to get what we want, by the way.
What's that?
We're going to get Tyson Holyfield 3, it looks like. There are all reports that they're trying to put that thing together. Evander,
see, that's going to look weird, though.
57 years old. Evander's 57.
That's going to be like two old dudes coming out of Starbucks fighting. I don't know if I want to see two old cats. I like to see Mike up against a, you know, up-and-comer type. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to.
So we saw Evander beat Mike twice. Does a 57-year-old Evander go for the hat trick and beat him a third time?
Damn, if he can't beat him, that's going to be bad on Mike. How long are they going to go?
Hopefully 3 rounds.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't imagine it could go much beyond that.
Okay, so is this fight next year when he turns 54?
It's preliminary discussions. We do not have a ton of details other than it is being discussed, that they're trying to put it together. And look, I'll be honest.
I mean, I would watch it for entertainment purposes, but I don't want to see two old dudes fighting.
I'll be honest, Duke. I will 100% watch it just because I want to see Mike, but I don't know if I want to see this. A 57, that just feels like a bridge too far. I do not want to watch a 57-year-old man in a boxing
ring. And is a Holyfield – first of all, what Holyfield needs to do is give me some clips. If he give me some clips like Jordan did with us to make us remember what it was, then like Tyson. See, Tyson gave it some clips, George, to make us see – something to say, okay, I see where the feet are and the hand speed. Okay, I understand it. Now, if Holyfield releases something like that, then it may get my juices flowing a little bit more. But I can only imagine that he's 57 years old and he's not swinging like that.
Well, Key, he did put out a video, and I would just say this. I didn't find it as impressive as Mike's. So I think that that in itself says something. Now, to your point, I too would probably like to see him, Michael, that is, Mike Tyson, fight a guy who is a current boxer in an exhibition.
Yeah.
But I don't think it to – I think maybe LZ might have mentioned it. I think more than three rounds is a lot to ask. Like, if you want Mike Tyson to go full out, he may not go longer than a round at this stage.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I mean, the legs are going to go on both guys. And Evander Holyfield is like, what, 3-4 years older than Mike Tyson?
Four.
So
four.
We're so focused in on Mike being old. Evander is old too, man.
He's 57. I mean, I they're going to get my 50 or 60 or whatever it is. I'm not going to pretend that I'm not going to buy it. I'm going to buy it.
No, I don't think I'm going to buy it either. But if it's free and if it's on, you know.
You can come to my house, LZ.
And I'm stuck. No, you might have the Rona. I'm not going over there. I'm sorry.
No, I'm fine. I'm healthy good? As a horse. Okay. How was the weekend, George? How'd you get through the last dance?
We had a birthday for my 6-year-old this weekend. So we did we had a big day. She was when we went and got her up at 7:30, she was already in a dress. She had changed out of her pajamas, and we had a fun day. We had a lot of gifts. We had friends that came by. We did like what are the caravan, right? Caravan. Yeah. We did one of those caravan things. You know, we had family come over and hung out in the front yard, like one side of the yard, us on the other. But we did our best, I guess, to have a good time over the weekend. And then, I'm a little sad about the Last Dance being over, but I am looking forward to the next set of documentaries, the Lance one. You're not looking forward to the Lance one? Because here's the thing, Keith.
I am.
Lance one is interesting because Showtime did one, but it was unauthorized. So it didn't have Lance on the record where it had all the teammates and had footage of Lance. This one actually has Lance talking about all that stuff. And I know that now it's been a long time, but people forget what that was like back then. Like that guy
So he's going to tell us that he was doping. Is he going to say, this is what I was
doing? I don't
know.
We'll find out, I guess.
That's why there's a documentary.
Yeah, we'll find out. But he made cycling matter. Like nobody in this country really cared about cycling like that.
I don't care about cycling now, but I get it.
Bruce Lee one is going to be
Bruce
good.
Bruce is good. Yeah, Bruce is good.
And then the Maguire Sosa the week after that. So we got another couple of weeks of some fun stuff.
I'll deal with Maguire Sosa. I don't know. I mean, I guess you could talk me into Lance. I guess so. I enjoy watching Jordan because my son was obviously sitting here and learning about MJ, and he knows MJ. And he knows about all of those sort of things because, obviously, they got YouTube. So, you know, I don't know if he'll be into the Lance Armstrong one. So it may not invite me to want to sit down and watch it.
I'm interested in him being on the record telling the truth, which he has said he's going to do.
Okay, then I'll be watching
this. This documentary is supposed to be, reportedly, he started doping as early as 21 years old. So I want to hear the truth, and I also want to make sure that the stories of all the people's lives that he's destroyed get told publicly, because people don't really know just how savage he was in trying to protect his secret.
Like, I don't think any one of us here, or the four of us, none of us are really it's like cycling guys and follow the Tour de France religiously pre Lance Armstrong. But what I do remember about it was every single year somebody would win that race and then they'd be stripped of the title about 6 months later.
Except Greg LeMond.
Every guy would get stripped. So when Lance started ripping off all of these titles in a row, and especially considering the health issues he had, and then came back and what is it, 7 in a row? I was just looking at it the whole time saying, the other shoe's going to drop eventually, because in that sport, every single person was dirty.
Yeah, I don't know enough about it, the sport. I couldn't tell you. Yeah. you know, you tell Tudor Frank, I'm like, is he riding the bike the whole time by himself? Then people start saying, no, he has a team.
Well, no, he has like, a team, but they're all riding together.
I don't even know. Yeah, I don't know.
So, Key, there's an individual aspect to it, like the individual race. They're all racing together. And then they tabulate the times for the teams as they're all racing at the same time, too. So there's an individual race and a team race, but they are all racing at the same time.
Okay.
Are we going to get some Sheryl Crow? I want to see some Sheryl Crow.
Oh, that's true. Key, I think it would be for you, for someone that you don't know much about it, like, I think it would be educational for you. I think you'd be interested in it.
You know, you guys are kind of talking me into it. We'll see once I turn it on. Let's see, continue to look at the promotional side of it. And as I turn it on, if it gives me, it catches my eye, I'm willing to sit down. I'm not 100% on the no side of it.
Key,
but what
would,
I will be watching.
It would be like Sports ID Network. Think about that way.
Yeah. Only difference is there's no O.J. Simpson and Ray Caruth in this.
Right.
You never know.
Yeah.
The Sonata Show is coming up next. We'll see you here bright and early, 6 a.m. tomorrow on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.